Good morning. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Joy Powers. When we think about the modern civil rights era, there are many images that come to mind. Crowds of people holding signs, policemen attacking children with dogs and fire hoses, students sitting at lunch counters with jeering crowds behind them.
For many Americans, these images form our view of that time period and frame the fight for civil rights as a largely Southern issue. But historian and author Mark Speltz is hoping to change that image. His book, North of Dixie, features images from cities like Detroit, Chicago, and Milwaukee during the civil rights era.
Speltz is a senior historian at American Girl and a graduate from UWM. He joined me in studio to talk about the ways photos impact our understanding of history and his inspiration for this book.
Well, I started at UWM and I was taking a visual culture and photography class in 2007. And we were asked to select a photograph and interpret it and interrogate it and talk about it. And I knew I wanted to do civil rights photography. I've always been incredibly moved by the compelling and powerful photographs. And so when I was looking at some iconic photographs from 1963 of a sit-in in Jackson, Mississippi. And I then, in my other hand, at the UWM archives, held a Milwaukee photograph from August 1967. And I had never seen it before. And I looked at it, and there was an interracial group of marchers, the NAACP, Milwaukee Youth Council, marching through the South Side. But there were police officers with guns pulled, pointing to the air, escorting them through. And I thought, well, that's odd. Why are they doing that? And what I came to learn was they were going through this neighborhood and they were intensely angry about it and throwing rocks and bags of urine and firecrackers. Whites from the sidewalks did not like this intrusion, this protest. And it was incredibly contested. So the photograph opened up a whole new world for me that I wasn't aware of, the civil rights movement in the North. My advisor was working on the 40th anniversary celebrations at the time, so open housing, conferences, there were oral history projects. And I began to understand what this meant to the community and how the photographs we see now help us understand that time period.
Having learned history of the civil rights era in Wisconsin, I can say that most of the images I remember, they are from places like Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas. When I came to Milwaukee, I was surprised to learn things about the civil rights history. And I think part of that is the lack of imagery and kind of the lack of conversation. Do you think the two play into one another? Like the lack of images is part of why we don't talk about it as much?
I think that's exactly right. You don't see them in textbooks. Our textbooks tell a very Southern story. They tell a very aggressive, violent story with the photographs. You see people being attacked. You see brutalized black bodies. You don't see African Americans standing up and making change themselves. You don't often see images that show agency. You see them, you know, being washed down a sidewalk in Birmingham. Or you see a very charismatic male leader speaking at, you know, the March on Washington. Those are the pictures you see. Now, kids in Milwaukee, they might come across a few pictures in local textbooks or local packets. But once you move out further, I grew up in Minnesota. I had never seen those photographs before. I wasn't familiar with what happened in Chicago. And I don't think that that's necessarily the fault of educators or maybe even textbook writers. I think it's how we've been trained to think about the civil rights movement, both from when it was happening to now, how we educate our children. While it was happening, the press, the Northern press, would much rather point a finger at the Southern part of the nation. It was easier to frame. It was easier storylines to follow. It made you feel better about your own communities. But these same issues and more, and some that were more pervasive, were, you know, boiling up and boiling over in the neighborhoods. I think that the Northern press, when they did have to cover it, they covered it in a very similar way. Like on Milwaukee's newspapers, you would see whites rioting. You'd see tear gas. You'd see angry whites fighting with the police. But what you didn't see were the marchers themselves very often. In fact, in the first 2 weeks, over 75% of the photographs featured whites, police, politicians like the mayor, but not Father Grappi and the African-American youth who were leading the struggle. So I think that that's part and parcel for how the community covered it. If you're going to cover it, it focused on the most attention-grabbing issues. Other times it would be buried to the back pages.
Do we know why that is?
I think that it's a lot of, you know, you don't want to make your community look real bad. In Detroit, there were lots of complaints of police brutality in the 1950s and 60s. And the Detroit NAACP would take photographs of people who came in and gave their story and did an affidavit, and they would be bruised and battered, and there would be blood on their jackets. And these photographs then would be sent to the press, the white press, the black press, and only the black press would run it. Between 1956 and 1960, there were 150 allegations of police brutality, and a third of those, the NAACP found, that they happened in police custody. So these photographs helped expose this invisible example of abuse. Now, I think students today, if they see these photographs in textbooks nationally, they'll start to understand that the struggle was coast to coast. They'll see that ordinary Americans, like their parents and their grandparents and their great-grandparents, took part in these types of struggles. They didn't wait for Dr. King to come to their community or some other well-known civil rights leader. They made change on their own. These struggles were built, conceived of, and waged locally by ordinary Americans.
When we look at the images in the book, especially of Chicago, a lot of the Art Shea images, to me, it seems like we're looking at people in the South. You know, in one, they're holding Confederate flags. You know, they're screaming in this way that we think of as being so indicative of these images from Alabama and Mississippi. And in that same way, when we look at the images from Milwaukee, we have that same kind of sense, at least in my mind. And both of these cities are still dealing with this kind of lasting segregation. How do these images help us fill in kind of our cultural knowledge gaps about our own cities?
I think seeing the photographs of people from Milwaukee or Chicago holding Confederate flags and angry at civil rights protesters, they complicate our understanding of the civil rights struggle, how we remember it. We think of it as a celebratory tale. There are many things to celebrate, important speeches, important legislative acts, and really important moments. But when we bring the North into the picture, it complicates it. There's a lot of things that are left undone, issues that we still grapple with. And I think that the photos give us that historical context. So if you grow up thinking, you know, freedom in the North wasn't the promised land that we like to think it was. There were an incredible amount of issues that blacks dealt with. There was housing segregation, workplace discrimination. There was over-policing and poor police and community relations, urban renewal. There was poor city services and trash collection, things that people dealt with in their daily life. So I think that the pictures and whites' reaction to people protesting changed the way you look at it, and that helps us reassess our assumptions about the past.
A lot of what you mentioned, specifically urban renewal, a lot of the issues that we're dealing with, they're these things that can't always be pictured. And there isn't always an image associated with it. Do you think that that affects our ability to understand these issues?
I think the photographs that you see coming out of the North had to work a lot harder to visualize and make visible certain issues. You couldn't capture a lender saying no to somebody at a bank. I mean, I looked. I searched through JET looking for those African-American families outside of a bank, well-dressed, but unhappy because they couldn't get a loan photos. They didn't really exist. But I did find pictures from Look magazine in Philadelphia where you saw that same family walking into a neighborhood and staring at a house that they just loved and it fit what they wanted. There was a for sale sign out front, yet they knew they couldn't buy in that particular neighborhood. So photographers worked very hard to capture that sentiment, that feeling. Now, the way that activists could really make the issue visible was by marching onto the South Side in Milwaukee or through a different part of Chicago where they knew they would get a reaction. And that reaction would then get into the newspapers and onto the television news and call attention to the issue. Now, in Milwaukee, we see that the activists themselves are not what the focus is on. After the first 2 weeks of the struggle here, the open housing struggle in 1967, the press tended to focus on everybody but them. But they still raised attention and called attention to the issue, which is important. I think when we look at the Southern photographs, it's very easy to see four students sitting at a lunch counter and not being served. And they're just sitting there politely and reading a book and studying. They're nonviolent. They're not getting any help. Or on the other side, you can see people sitting there and having ketchup and mustard poured all over them, sugar poured over their heads, people threatening them, very dangerous situation. Those ones are very easy to read. You know exactly what's going on. Now in the North, when you marched into a neighborhood, you know, that picture from Milwaukee with police guards with guns drawn, escorting a group through a neighborhood, that's not a quick read. You're not sure what's going on there. And they're not as black and white and as easy to read as the Southern photos.
So what are the images that we're going to see from Milwaukee in your book, North of Dixie?
Well, I included about three or four. There's a really strong one from Jet magazine that I like a lot, and it shows Dick Gregory, Val Phillips, and Father Groppi. And they're all looking back at the march and looking at some of the counter-protesters. But there's a steely look of determination on each of their faces. And I've always loved that photograph. It ran in Jet magazine right after the marches. Jet magazine covered Milwaukee for about 3 to 4 consecutive weeks. A lot of photographs were there. Those were seen by over 500,000 subscribers. And then that magazine was passed around, you know, at church and in barbershops. So Milwaukee's struggle was seen nationally. But it's not necessarily remembered nationally today like other Southern struggles. Another one of my favorite photos in the book, I came across it early on during my research. It ran, I think, on the third day of the struggles. There were arrests outside of the Freedom House after it had been burnt out. There's this incredible photograph of a woman who's in one hand holding her purse and a police officer's baton. Her right hand is straight up in his face, pushing him away. And what this photograph said to me 50 years later was, not everybody chose to go smoothly. Not everybody was willing to be lifted limply into a paddy wagon. Nonviolence was chosen by many, but not everybody. She was willing to struggle. She was willing to fight. And this ran on the front page of the Milwaukee Journal. Now, not everybody read the journal, but I think that a lot of people saw it and were inspired by her actions and came out to join the marches after that. In fact, I heard that from several people who were active in the marches, that photographs of arrest scenes, police interactions were inspiring. They did make them want to come out.
So why is this a conversation that you're resurrecting 50 years later? Why is this a conversation that is still important?
I think this is an incredibly important book for two reasons. Number one, it provides a lot of context to what we're seeing today. Me personally, I hadn't even thought of St. Louis and Ferguson before 2014. And that sounds awful to say, but I was not aware of the civil rights struggles that were taking place there. I was beginning work on this, and as I was reading about Ferguson, a couple weeks later, I would start to see photograph galleries on the St. Louis newspaper websites that would show historic photos from St. Louis. And my eyes would open up and go, there were decades worth of struggles there before this. There were a lot of different issues. There were hiring problems. There were protests against banks that wouldn't lend to blacks. All sorts of struggles that I saw elsewhere in the North and West. And that context was not available to the average person before Ferguson popped up. So I think nationwide, the book helps provide historical context to what we're seeing now on a whole range of issues. I think it also provides hope and is inspiring. The photos help people understand that it wasn't civil rights leaders taking every step, planning every campaign. All the local campaigns were led locally. They were fought locally, and they were either won or lost locally. And many of them continue yet today.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you for having me.
Mark Speltz is the author of North of Dixie, Civil Rights Photography Beyond the South. He's also a senior historian at American Girl, and he lives in Madison. Speltz will be at Boswell Books tonight for an event at 7 o'clock. There is more information at wuwm.com.